Anyone who has ever experienced a mental health challenge knows all too well just how dark and how lonely a journey that can be. But you know, just like any journey, the road can get you to a better place. And yes, along the way, inevitably, you will hit the occasional bump in the road. Hi, I'm John Milkey, the Milkman, and welcome to Bumps in the Road, a podcast I'm doing from inside a 28-foot RV that was gifted to me by my social media followers and my radio audience, each of whom believed in this project from day one. So, I'm traveling to community events and live and location broadcasts across Canada, and soon, the USA. So keep listening for details on where we're headed next. And if we're coming your way, I'd love to invite you into the BTRV for mental health so we can hear about your journey and how you're still going strong, even after hitting a few of those bumps in the road. So come on in. Let's have a conversation. It is another edition of Bumps in the Road. So far, everywhere that the BTRV for mental health has gone, we've had someone willing to come in and share some of their story, some of their journeys, I like to say, with mental health. And it is a journey. And that's why the podcast is called Bumps in the Road. My guest in the BTRV for mental health is the person responsible for the BTRV actually having power. Well, it had power. It had too much power. Now it has the right amount of power. Johnny has done an enormous amount of work and volunteered and stepped up. So just first, right out of the gate, thank you for that. And thank you for being here and willing to share some of your story.
Well, I thank you for what you're doing. This is what this is about, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I know, you know, through my depression, I found it so isolating. And, you know, that's part of the disease too, right? It makes you feel very alone. And so if we can put something out there that hopefully somebody hears something that they can latch onto that gives them hope or that they recognize and it helps pull them through a dark moment, then it's absolutely worth doing. So I know you a little bit. You call yourself on Facebook, and somebody saw this the other night when I tagged you, an Aspie drummer.
That's correct.
Now, is Asperger's disease considered a mental health matter?
It is. It's it leads to a lot of mental health problems because it is it's actually a gene. So ASD, which is autism spectrum disorder, is actually caused by a gene. It's been isolated. So new discovery in the last few years. But it does lead to a lot of mental health problems because that's part of Asperger's. I was diagnosed in March of 2022, and I'm now 48. I was 47 when
so
I was diagnosed.
So this is recent.
Yeah, very recent.
So had you had mental health issues? I hate the word issues. We got to find better language.
I had mental health problems, issues. We can call them issues because, or we can call them mental health challenges. How's that?
Sure. Or mental health diagnosis.
Yeah. I had been seeing a psychiatrist previously to this up until the age of about 40. I had mental health problems all my life. As a child, I was raised by a single mom without a dad. So she had some issues of her own with alcohol, and I was raised in a in the biker community, let's say, with some MC guys who, you know, I saw a lot of stuff going on. And
I don't know what MC is, though.
Motorcycle club guys.
Okay. All right.
Some bad.
Sure.
Bad people.
Sure.
Not all of them. Just some. Anyways. Mm-hmm. So, and my mom wasn't working. So I was raised on extremely low income. So, you know, at school, I was always bullied because of my clothes. I wasn't a fashion dressing guy. I was a scrawny little dude.
The question popped into my mind. So that led to bullying in school, but I didn't need to ask it because
It did.
There it is, obviously.
It led to bullying, right? Because I wasn't keeping up with the Joneses, right? Back then.
And you were wearing tough skins, right? You and me
wearing
tough skins?
Jordache or whatever, hand-me-downs. I know I just dated myself there.
Yeah. Orange tab Levi's.
Yeah, many of those, right? From Woolworths and those places.
Sure.
Yeah. And anyway, so I was also in special ed.
Okay.
Because having not been diagnosed with ASD, well, no one knew what was going on with me and why I wasn't learning the same way in class. So again, in the school hallways, being bullied, as being called the R word.
Right.
And that, you know, led to a lot of things.
What was the impact of that on you? I mean, being bullied relentlessly, were you fighting? Were you being roped into fights without wanting to be in them?
No, it wasn't physical fights. It was me. I would walk away, start crying a lot, go home crying, not wanting to go to school because I would be scared of going to school. If I did get into a fight, I can count on my hand, one hand, maybe okay. twice that I All got right. into a physical confrontation.
Because you're a big dude, you know?
But I wasn't back then.
Okay.
I was, That's fair. You know, up until my 20s, I was, you know, the size of Ryan, my son, who's like 130 pounds,
yeah.
which is like yes, nothing,
yes.
right?
I just met him, yes, he
and
is.
And 5'7", which is not very tall. So it's kind of scrawny, right? So I threw up, and then when I was 8, I contracted bacterial meningitis. So I was hospitalized for 3 weeks. Mm. They weren't sure if I was going to make it back then. This was like 1982. So it was different. And that's when I met my father for the first time.
Did he come to the hospital because you were so sick?
Yeah, my mom reached him because they didn't know how.
So this was serious.
This was serious.
Wow.
I didn't know who he was. We did start having a bit of a relationship afterwards, but it was never what it could have been. It was too late, you know, in right. life, and he was trying to re-raise me, which doesn't work.
So beyond the motorcycle establishment that was around you, did you have male role figures in your life at all?
Off and on.
But nothing consistent.
Nothing consistent, except for, and this one's a tough one for me to talk about, my father's brother, my Uncle Jim,
okay.
who sadly we lost in 2012, he took me under his wing because he knew what his brother was like, and he knew that.
So he stepped up.
He stepped up.
That's amazing.
He came here from BC like my father did, and I was 3 years old, and he sought me out, and we worked side by side at Midas when I was a teenager for a couple years. We wow. did so many projects at his home on cars and stuff. So all my mechanical skills is thanks to him. He taught me that.
So let's talk about that, because that's how I came. Well, I came to know you. I guess you were a radio listener of mine for some time.
Yep.
That grew into Facebook. And I certainly know you as a very well-respected motorcycle mechanic. And mm-hmm. you've got a business right now that, I mean, the lineup of bikes outside your shop is something to behold. I mean, people love you, man. Obviously, you do good work, or you wouldn't have that kind of a parade outside your door. It was insane.
Thanks.
But I mean, did you find your way into school to do this, or were you just lucky enough to be hanging around that uncle?
Well, no. What happened was because I was in special ed, the high school I went to was called L'École Secondaire Publique Quartier, which was a trade school.
Okay.
So I took up everything in that school. Small engines, body work, general mechanics, welding, woodwork. I did it all. And that's also where I excelled in my music. That's where I found.
Okay.
Anyways, and then I started working at Midas with my uncle. And we worked side by side. I worked at Canadian Tires, a tire buster. And then I worked at Harley Davidson. I was doing my apprenticeship there on motorcycles because that was really my passion.
How exciting was that?
That was cool. And this was at the time when Harley in Ottawa had Suzuki and other brands under their roof, and then okay. they all split up, and then everyone got laid off. Oh. So I went into computers, went to college.
What?
Studied IT.
Wow.
And I worked for the federal government for 17 years.
See, I didn't know that about you. And what I love about this is there are so many young people who are going through the high school system now mm-hmm. who, you know, I mean, the trades are poo-pooed, right? No. You got to go to university. You got to be the doctor, the lawyer, the scientist. You need all those things. I had a teacher step up for me in high school because I was hell-bent. I was going to be on the radio. And all I needed was 2 years of college, and I could do that.
Yeah.
And he had parent after parent after parent in front of him all the time saying, my kid is not going to go to college. My kid has to go to university. I mean, this was being forced upon kids. And mm-hmm. his argument was always, no, your kid hasn't got a hope of succeeding with anything that a university can offer. What is wrong with a community college? What is wrong with learning a trade, a skill? And obviously, exactly what you're saying, you fell in love with that, the woodworking, yep. the mechanical side of things. And I mean,
just for the record, I sucked at woodworking.
Well, yeah, we're all judged on that one birdhouse, aren't we? Still got that birdhouse.
Still got to be honest about it.
But, you know, like Mike Rowe's a good example of someone who's banging the drum loud about, look at what electrician, you ever have an electrician in your house or a plumber in your house? Look how much you paid them to do that job.
They're making good money.
There's nothing wrong with doing that work. We need people doing that work. So fortuitously, somebody got you into the right avenue where you were able to do that. But then the government thing, how the hell did that happen? That's a complete left turn.
Well, I was always into computers. I was always a nerd.
Okay.
As well. I'm a geek. And this is part of Asperger's or ASD is where I'm like a sponge. I want to know everything.
So it's a hyper focus.
Oh yeah. I'm into, I will delve into something and I won't stop studying it until I reach the end. And then
amazing.
I go, okay, I'm done with this. I'm on to the next thing. And computers always fascinated me. I was always a computer geek on the side. So when I had a chance and I was laid off and EI said they were paying courses, I did an aptitude test and went to l'Estie Collégiale, studied computer engineering, computer tech. And then from there, I did a co-op at the National Research Council.
Okay.
Then they hired me and I was there for 2 years. And then after that, I was off to, I got a different position in, for Industry Canada. So I was at 235 Queen up until 2014 working.
And is that when you found your way back to the motorcycles?
I was offered a buyout package because the government was laying off a whole, they were amalgamating called shared services. Okay. And then I thought I had a week to make a decision on what my options, I had three different options. And the option I took was full buyout package and I want to start my shop.
While you're working for the government, and let's face it, government workers have benefits like nobody has benefits.
Mm-hmm.
How was your mental health?
Terrible.
Were you doing anything about your mental health while you were privileged
to
have that?
I'd gone to the employee assistance program.
Right.
Because I was being bullied by my boss. Again, I was being bullied because I have Asperger's. No, I didn't know yet. I have a habit of this thing called stimming. I don't know if you know what that is. So stimming is when we do a repetitive motion. Some people could sit there and do this. Me, I rock.
Me, I rub my eyebrow. And I've always thought that was anxiety.
To me, it's called stimming.
Okay.
It's a soothing, comforting thing.
That's my
eyebrow. And what happens is when I would sit in my office, in my cubicle, and when I'm focused on something, that's what I do. It's my stim. I rock.
Okay.
And I'd get teased about it. And because our thinking is black and white, we're very different. We don't have 50 shades of gray. Yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
You want a solution? Here's a solution. Do it. You can't do that in the government. You have to talk to every monkey in the tree first. And if one monkey disapproves, you're back to square one.
Right.
And for me, it was very tough because it was like, the darn solution is right there.
Right there.
I can do this now. No,
right.
No.
Right.
And it was just the way that they wanted things done. And I saw so much waste. And it was terrible.
So that was taking a toll on your mental health. Did you realize it at the time?
No, because it was a necessity for me to work because I was raising the twins. And it was tough. And I the money was good. The benefits were there, right? With kids, you have to have that. So I realized it in 2012. And that's when I had already had the idea of starting my shop in 2012. So I was doing work on the side, and I thought, I got to get out of the government. And I knew that there was going to be a buyout package coming. And I thought, I want to have something to fall back on, and I need to get the hell out of here. And I broke down in 2013, and I missed a lot of work.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because I had a breakdown live on the air.
Mm.
you know, my first day back after 3 months off. Pretend it never happened, is what I was told. What happened in your breakdown?
I'm sorry to hear that you had a breakdown. It's not easy.
No, it's not. But I just want you to know that I can relate to it.
Yeah.
But I want to hear what it was like for you.
So
I'm sure you know there are similarities, but there's probably also differences too.
Well, mom was ill, very ill, and it was weighing on me. And work was becoming a lot tougher. I was in charge of a nationwide project called a POP project, which was printer optimization, and nothing I did was right. Nothing I did was good enough, and it wasn't. None of it was my fault. When I look back of it, it was just too much, and I was compounded by all this. And then I had a bad breakup, and it was, so I found myself living.
So we're talking a lot of layers of things going happening on. Here. Yeah.
And then one day I was at work, and I literally snapped at someone. Literally, just they actually walked away thinking that I was going to take them and throw them out the window because I had had enough, and I snapped.
Did you recognize in that moment?
I did. It's when I backed off and went back to my desk and said, okay, I was being treated poorly, and I snapped at it. But I realized that, okay, I kind of went over the edge, but that's when I realized that, oh, crap.
But that's happened to me. Yeah. Like, I became someone I didn't recognize.
Yeah, you're a monster.
I was. And I've often said depression turns you into an asshole. And people push back on that because they don't like hearing it. But it did. It turned me into a complete raving madman. I was not the John Milkey that was hired in that radio station years earlier.
Wow.
You know, I had changed. And I hadn't recognized it.
But if I may ask you, when I rampaged, everything I said was exactly how I felt, and there was truth to it. There was no and I felt in the way I responded, and I'm not excusing it, but because I'd been overloaded and I got pushed over the edge, my brain went into this mode of, you need to tell them now. This is the truth.
Well, it's the bullet point. It's the bullet points, right? Exactly. I don't have time to extrapolate on this. It's just, this is how I feel. Yeah, I remember one of the first conversations I had with someone I hold in very, very high regard. They have an unbelievably cool job within the government, and I respect this person immensely. Before I was even diagnosed, I'd been over at their house for dinner, and he said, you know, what do you mean you don't like the way you're behaving at work? And I said, I'm realizing lately that I'm not the same person I was, and that little things are bugging me. And he said, well, like what? And I said, you know, I had to read a commercial. My job at the end of my shift was to go into the studio and read whatever commercials were put in front of me. Mm-hmm. Typically the commercials were typed up with a certain font and spacing, and there's a format to it, you know, easy to read, and away you'd go. Well, I guess the client had written this commercial, and it was one big run-on sentence, all in lowercase, no punctuation. It was a 60-second commercial, and it was squeezed into, like, the top 1/50th of the paper. And I lost it. And I just, you know, it was like an out-of-body experience. I was in the voice booth screaming, what the hell is wrong with these writers? They can't cut and paste. They're wasting your time, producer. You know, they're wasting my time. I'm sick of this goddamn stuff. Like, I just went, whoa. And so I recounted that story to my friend, and he looked at me and he just sort of nodded his head, and he said, what you need to understand, and this has stuck with me, I'll never forget it, what you need to understand is that for whatever reason, that person is doing what they think is right. Just because John Milkey's the kind of guy who's going to go and cut and paste the email, reformat it, add caps, add commas, add periods and exclamation points, and have it fit the page properly, just because that's what John Milkey would do, doesn't mean that that's how somebody else sees the world. And I went, okay, all right, so I am putting unreasonable expectations on the team that I work with and acting like a complete asshole, you know, about it. And once you're so far down that road, you can't backpedal that.
No, you can't.
Right? And I'm sure the same was for you when you had your breakdown. Yep. You know, there it is. Here's what I feel. Here's where I'm at. You can't take that back.
Nope. And it was tough.
And you wouldn't want to.
No, I didn't want to. There's a point of regret, and there was a point of release.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm actually feeling really good that I finally said something.
Now you got to deal with it.
But I feel like shit at the same time. Sure. I feel bad for the person that took the grunt of this it wasn't just that person.
Right. And you feel bad about that, because that person was wrong place, wrong time. But I think a lot of the, you know, what you feel is fear. What's going to happen next?
Oh, I was fear of reprisal, like completely.
But on the other hand, there it is. Yep. Now we got to deal with it. Yep. That's a healthy thing.
It did. The union had to get involved, and luckily, I'm not a big union guy, but luckily they understood. And they said, we understand. Essentially what it came down to was I had guidelines on this project brought forth by the government of Canada.
Yep.
And the guidelines were not being followed by my bosses because they were allowing things to slip through the guidelines. And I would tell them, well, listen, I was given these guidelines. I have to, and again, my black and white brain's going, there's a guideline, there's a reason for these guidelines.
Don't deviate from the plan. Right.
But then when they do deviate from the plan, well, it takes me a little more time to change something up. And that's when they would say, oh, you're not on time with the project. Yeah, well, you flip and stop changing things. But anyway, so it led to that.
I've had similar conversations. Yeah. I feel you. Yeah, okay.
And that led to that. And the anxiety level started to heighten even more because I was allowing myself to feel like, again, I hadn't been diagnosed yet, but I was feeling like, okay, I need to be more me now. I need to stop bending over for everyone. And people weren't liking that anymore, that I wasn't the same guy who would like, yeah, I'll do whatever you want now. I'm like, yeah, I'm not that guy. I got to stop this because my brain was fighting that all my life. If there was something wrong, my brain would go, I would go against myself.
So when was the moment then that you sort of figured out, I got to do something about this. I need help here.
That was 2012 when that first started. And that's when I was seeing a psychiatrist through my doctor.
And what did they diagnose you as
then,
with?
Well, then I was, she was trying to coax me to go see a psychologist because I had coverage to get a diagnosis for ASD because she had gone through everything I was saying. We'd done some testing and she says, I have a feeling that you might have autism.
Okay.
And I went, yeah, I know what autistic people are. And to me, it's like,
I've seen Rain Man.
I'm not Rain Man. I'm not sure, like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I never went for it. I never did. Then in January of 2022, pandemic. December was really hard. I had another bad relationship that was really bad. We had to sell our house. And this was during the pandemic, and finding a place to live during the pandemic was next to impossible. Mm-hmm. So I had to move into a location that I shouldn't be in legally, but I had no choice. And
understood.
And it weighed on me a bit. It still does a bit sometimes because I never leave work. Enough said. Anyways, so in January of 2022, I had a really massive self-breakdown. Where I was at home and I didn't want to talk to no one. I was crying.
Were you alone?
I was alone. I was had my Brembo with me, thank goodness.
It's your dog.
And I was crying and I said, no, there's something's not right. I'm just really unhappy. And I knew I wasn't in my right mind. I said, something's... So I contacted my family doctor. And within a week, she saw me and... she says, I'd like to go through your charts from, a few years ago. She goes, you mentioned you've seen a psychiatrist. I said, yeah. She goes, do you give me permission to review that? And I said, oh, absolutely. And then she called me up one day. I think it was about 3 days after. She says, I had a chance to review your charts. And she said, did you ever get your diagnosis, to get diagnosed, possibly tested for ASD? And I said, yeah, it was mentioned, but I never. I said, yeah. She goes, yeah, we see that in the chart that you never went. And I said, no. And she says, I would really like you to try and see what this is. So no more coverage. It cost me almost $1,000. You got to go through a psychologist, and psychiatrist can't do it. It has to be a psychologist.
Interesting. Okay.
Because the testing is done through a psychologist, and there's all sorts of, so there's verbal tests, there's sensory tests, there's vision tests, geometry, math, there's all sorts of, it's a long process and lots of questions. I said, okay, so started the process and went through all the testing. And yeah, sure enough, she calls me up and she says, yeah, she goes, I have a diagnosis. We'd like to see you, in my office and have a discussion. So I went in. This was March 2022. And she says, you are most definitely on the spectrum. And she says, everything that we've read through your old chart and everything you've told me now, of how you were feeling when you were having a breakdown, she goes, you were actually having an autistic meltdown. She goes, that's what you're having. So she went through some of the steps. So an autistic meltdown, for those who don't know what it is when it's a sensory overload. When my sensor, because autism is, I'm sensory based, you're word based.
Mm-hmm.
My, everything with me is emotions. Okay. So that's why we have a very strong tie to animals, because animals are like me. We're sensory based. Everything we see, everything we touch has an effect on us.
Okay.
It's not words. Okay. It's a little different. So a over sensory meltdown is when everything in my mental mind and body is literally overloaded and it can't take it anymore. And it's literally like a radioactive meltdown. You just literally shut right down and nobody can get close to you. Nobody can even talk to you. It's just get the F away from me. Leave me alone. I'm in a bubble and you don't even try to touch me because it'll hurt me. Like literally physically don't. It's just, I'm completely oversaturated with everything and it's, sure, we need to be sure alone. And we withdraw into this.
Are you safe being alone though? Like, is that the concern for people around you? Is that I can't leave you alone? I have a fear that you're going to hurt yourself alone here. You
no
are, eh?
No, because
see, I'm not.
Yeah, you suffer from me alone depression.
Is a bad, right?
Yeah,
that's a bad.
It's
bad,
tough for
bad
me to
situation
be alone. It really is. But with the girlfriends I've had, the most recent girlfriend, other than Becky here, was Tina, and we're still very good friends. And the reason good for that is because I was diagnosed after a breakup. And she's a children's aid worker.
Okay.
And the first thing she said to me when I spoke to her about it was, the first thing she says, she goes, I should have known. She goes, you had all the freaking traits.
Isn't that interesting?
She goes, it never clued in
that
on
in her professional
me
life, she can recognize yeah that, but in a relationship.
Yeah, she goes, it all makes sense. She goes,
right? That closeness.
Yeah, she's seen me do a meltdown, and yeah, she just thought I was just flipping out and trying to control everything.
Wow.
And she was like, and she apologized. She said, you know, if, and word for word, she said, we went out for lunch. She said, if I'd known that, she goes, I would have done things differently. And she goes, I'm sorry. And I said, no, it's okay, because even I didn't know. So even I didn't know what the hell was going on with me. I was like, why am I acting like this? Why am I not? But all my life was like that. That's why I felt like this all my life, because I was like, why am I so freaking different from everyone else? Why am I
And you and I talked about this when we were working on the RV the mm-hmm other day. And you and I had exactly the same comment to someone once in our life, you know, that we're going through this and the people around you, they're concerned and, you know, relationships are falling apart and they mm-hmm still love you, but they're concerned for you, but you're not making any damn sense, man.
Yep.
And they want an explanation as to why suddenly you are a very different person than the one they knew. And what I said to you the other day, and I saw your head, you really were excited to hear me say it because you've said it yourself. How the hell can I explain to someone else what is happening to me when I can't explain it to me?
Exactly.
I don't understand this.
I didn't even know me.
Right.
Because throughout my life, I've been masking to try to fit in.
Survival.
Yeah. And it to me, it became the norm to mask, but it is. Can we swear here?
If you want to.
No, it's flipping exhausting.
Say it. Say it.
It's fucking exhausting.
There you go, man.
Okay. I've been doing charitable stuff 20 plus years, and I do recall now, after every single event that I would organize and run or be a part of, I remember going at home now and feeling drained, and I need to be alone for a week.
Yep.
But that's part of ASD.
Okay.
The masking exhausts you.
And I'm guessing with ASD, you are also all in.
Oh, yeah.
Fully committed.
I'm fully committed.
Yeah, I get there's that about no you. I got black, that about you yeah day one.
and I'm black and white.
Yep.
If I have something to say to you, I can be very diplomatic about it. Of course, I learned that. You know, that's part of, I was forced to learn certain traits that I had to learn.
Now, right? Where did you learn that? Was that?
I was forced to. Just through life, trying to fit in. Life, you know, trying to fit in.
So we're not talking like a cognitive behavioral therapy.
No, I didn't have any of that
at
all. Like I said, I was diagnosed. I was 47.
Gee.
So after my diagnosis, I saw the psychologist five times after. And she did explain that I would go through a period of depression, which I did. I was mourning myself because I thought my entire fucking life was a lie. I tried to fit into a world that I wasn't made to be in, and I tried to be something I wasn't. I could have been happier much younger if I'd known this much earlier and adapted with it.
Yes, but you got there.
I'm there, and I'm happy I am now. I'm no longer depressed about it because I know what it is, and I know what I have.
And that helps, doesn't it?
Oh, big time. Now I know what my triggers are.
Okay.
One of my biggest triggers was, it's a stupid thing for someone, but for me, it literally drove me nuts, was my freaking phone at work. Because being, you know, mostly a one-man shop, my phone is off the hook all day long. And I'm trying to work, and every little sound that phone made drove me.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could explain how it made me feel. And it was just absolutely crazy. And after my diagnosis, I thought, okay. So one of the things I had to learn through the psychologist was identifying my triggers and trying to remove those. Okay, let's eliminate the triggers. So
you've done some serious work then.
Oh, I had to. So in the shop, I made changes where my phone ringer's off when I'm working.
Okay.
And my voicemail says, you know, thank you for calling, za-da-da. I will check my messages twice a day. I'm very busy right now. Please leave a message or text me at this or email me.
Okay.
And it helps me a great
deal. But I respect that because you're, you know, recognizing a problem, coming up with a solution.
Yep.
I don't think it's an unreasonable thing for you as a business person to say that
to
your
client. I even posted it on my business page.
I mean, do you want me working on your machine or do you want me on the phone?
Yep.
Because I'm only one person and I can only do one thing at a time, right? No matter how good a team I've got around.
Exactly. And the thing with autism is that, like you talked about earlier, we're hyper-focused.
Yep.
So when I'm working on a bike, I'm like, I'm right in there, right? And if someone pulls me away, I lose that. It's gone. It takes me forever to get back in.
And that's
got
to be frustrating for you too, right?
And then it takes me forever to get back in.
So is the short-circuiting description that you gave me earlier, is that starting to happen?
That's called a sensory overload, right? And you're like, so I got the phone ringing, I got the compressor running, I got my tire machine making noise, I got a motorcycle revving, you know, or someone's walking in the door, my alarm system saying front door open, and I'm just like, enough.
Yep.
It's too much for me.
Yep.
For the average Joe,
that's just every day, and it's just what life is.
Yeah, it's whatever, you know, but for me, no.
I love that you recognize your triggers and you deal with your triggers, you know, because here we are, you know, recording this. It's just a couple of days before Mother's Day. And there's a news story right now. There's a school in Winnipeg, I guess, that is canceled. All references to Mother's Day, because not all kids have mothers around and it's triggering for them. And I read this stuff and I go, you know what?
Hold on.
I got a lot of things that trigger me, too.
Yeah.
Right. Like my ex-employer. You know, is I can't avoid seeing their logo. Yeah. They exist, you know, and listen, there. I respect there are a lot of people who work there that love it there. I ended up in a bad place for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But that's not up to the, I can't just say to the world, we need to get rid of this thing because it triggers me.
Yeah.
No. That it triggers me. I need to recognize that. So I need to come up with the tools and the solutions that when I see that, I'm like, okay.
Yeah. It's self. You're being responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing, right? The question I have about that for you, I want to see if this is something.
No, now the table's turning. Okay.
Yeah. Because this is something I experienced when I started making changes on things that I knew were going to be better for me, right? Where you start making changes in your life and people start treating you differently.
Yep.
And they, oh, what an a-hole. What's that about?
Yep.
Yeah. I've been experiencing that too, and I'm going, well, I posted something one day, and I noticed that some people were like not being, you can tell when someone's not, you know, so I made a post, and I said, you know what's cool is if someone's acting out of character, instead of, you know, dismissing that person or something, why don't you engage them?
I saw that post.
Ask them a question. See if they're okay.
Interesting that you bring this up, because that has been an eye opener through. Okay, so I had a bad experience. My depression hit me. I had a breakdown live on the air. I ended up back. You know, found my way back. Thought I was doing some really good work despite all of that. I focused on the show and the rest of the stuff that was happening around me in hallways and relationships that I knew I couldn't fix. I just like a bowl at a china shop. I just got in there, did my thing, got out, went home, and was trying to work on, you know, personal relationships that actually mattered to me and the things that I really valued. But I ended up in a situation where the station flipped formats and I found myself out of a job, and that's what's led me to where I am now. So within a couple of weeks. I am too. I didn't know it at the time. But, you know, I launched an internet radio station. And my thinking then was, you know, this will be a place where I can carry on the conversations about mental health that I was so involved in. Because they couldn't just stop. And they couldn't just exist on Facebook. There needed to be a back and forth discourse. And that's what the radio offers. Even if it's just me talking and bringing in comments, you know, that the microphone is just how I communicate in the world. And, you know, in very early on, there were a lot of people quite enamored with what I was doing, and they latched on to this guy with depression, this guy with anxiety, and look what he's doing. And they didn't recognize that the other stuff that was going on around me was I was making huge, huge personal changes and choices, and I was doing a lot of work. They couldn't adapt to the changes that I was making for myself. And they wanted to hold me in the place that I was in. And look, in a lot of cases, yeah, I was a jerk. I was an ass. And they had every reason to not want to, carry the torch and, you know, for my brand and whatever else. And but, you know, I couldn't just stay in that place. I had to evolve. I had to move on. And It was such an awful experience, and it's still an awful experience. It's 8 years without a full-time salary. It's a grind, and I'm not cut out for this. But my God, man, as a creative person, which I am, I'm a dreamer. This RV was a dream. You know, I make stuff happen. And all around me, I look at this radio environment I'm in, and it's like, what the hell is wrong with you guys that you can't see what I could be doing for your radio station? Okay, fine. I'm going to do this on my own. They couldn't have a conversation with me now and get me back. Hell no.
No.
This is mine now. I'm doing radio the way radio should be, and I own it, and I got an attitude about it, and I'm cocky about it, and it's you know, a lot of those people that, you know, just want me to be little Johnny Depression, you know, from 8 years ago, it rubs them the wrong way, and I just have to say, fine.
You know why I get it rubs them the wrong way? You know why? And I realize why. A lot of them can't control you.
Oh, for sure.
They'd like to push the buttons.
Oh, yeah.
They knew which ones to push. And when they realize they can't do that anymore.
Oh, because they could get anything they wanted from me.
They're totally like, whoa, what's this here? I got no use for this.
Yep.
That's how I feel.
Yep.
Man, dude. Man. So,
amazing conversation. We're running short on time only because we're outside Devotion Dance Company. It's their grand opening today. We're in the BTRV, but only for a certain period of time. I want to talk about the thing that I know that brings you absolute joy. When did you discover drumming? When did that become a thing in your life?
I was 12 years old. I wanted to drum all my life. I was always fixated on drums when listening to music. My mom was a musician. And I used to go to bars with her. She used to sing live at open jams. And so music is part of my life. And I was always fixated on the drummers. And from the age of 10, I started to air drum. So I would watch videos and see what they were doing and replicate it. And I'd listen to Quiet Riot, Metal Health.
Okay.
That's the album I used to air drum to.
There's some serious drumming in that.
All the time.
100%.
And then I was 12 years old. I got on a friend's drum kit, and I played. I just played a simple 4-4. Dum-ta, dum-dum-ta. And I went.
Laser focus, right?
Immediately had this rush of adrenaline that went, I'm good at something.
There you go.
And it became a thing of confidence for me.
Now, what is it now for you? Is it a release? Yeah, because I know you play in bands and stuff.
So many things for me. It is a passion.
Okay.
Music is one of my passions. It's a massive mental release, but it's a challenge because being autistic, I like to be mentally challenged. And so I don't always play just straight up music. I'm into some pretty progressive stuff that takes a lot of physical and mental adaptation because, you know, you know music, right?
I do, but I don't know the intricacies of it.
Okay,
and what I really love is listening to drummers talk, because yeah. I don't understand drums. I play a little bit of bass.
We should do a segment on drums.
But the way drummers talk to other drummers, like Dave Grohl's a great guy to talk to.
Yeah.
And when he breaks apart, you know, Ringo's style
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, Charlie Watts
yep.
versus his style,
yep.
you know, and this guy hits the cymbal on the upswing of his left yep. hand and the crossover, and I'm just like, they're seeing stuff that I didn't even know was there.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what to look for even after hearing it, but I'm at least now aware that
yep.
there's a whole intricacy to that art.
Oh, it's physically and mentally, it's incredible because
it looks fun as hell. I love watching you play the drums. You post videos all the time.
I'm going to have you come over and I'll give you a lesson. I'm not kidding.
No, that's not going to happen because you will short circuit because I have no rhythm at all.
Yeah? I challenge you.
Oh boy, here we go.
No, I'm seriously here challenging you to a lesson all where right. I know I can make you do a beat.
Johnny,
I promise you.
I will do that for you.
Excellent.
I will do that for you.
We're going to organize that.
And you can film it and embarrass the hell out of me.
You're not going to be embarrassed when I'm done with you. I'm still a music teacher, and I teach students who have special ed needs, and that's what I do. That's part of my passion. And I'm telling you that what you got to do with drumming is the hardest part with drumming is having each limb be independent of each other.
Oh, man. This is hopeless.
But nobody is born that way because we're not wired that way, right? Your right side wants to do what the right side wants, and the left side, you know, your left foot, left hand want to do things together, right? That's how it is. We're all born that way, but we have to retrain ourselves to split ourselves
all
in
right.
four. And I can
all
teach
right,
you that,
teacher.
Sir.
All right, teacher. you're on. Listen, not when I say today, I don't mean today, but, you know, in May 2023. Overall, how's your mental health? How do you feel you're doing?
Better. Much better. I am the changes I've made in the shop and the way I do business and with growing more into my music has really, really made a huge difference now that I know how I work and how my brain works and having this wonderful woman in my life right now.
There you go. She is. She's great.
Who also has an autistic child, so she
okay.
gets it.
All right.
And she's an Aspie herself. So we understand each other
okay.
very well.
Okay.
So we have this connection that, and to me, it's just awesome.
Well, I love watching the two of you together because you certainly click. And I've only been around at a limited amount, grant you. But when you get a chance to talk to other people who, you know, they tell you that they're struggling, they're going through a rough time. If you could only offer them one piece of advice based on your experience, what would you tell someone who's struggling right now and really going through a real rough, dark, dark time?
I would have to say the number one thing is not to give up, no matter how dark the space looks, okay? Respect yourself first. Absolutely important. What others think of you means nothing because what they think is not something you can ever control as much as we would like to. And that you need to believe in yourself and reach out to someone who's close. It's important that you reach out to someone you can trust because you can't win the battle on your own, but you can win it with the people who believe in you and who will stand with you to no end. That's what you need to do. And it's okay. It's okay to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
With the right people. And talk. Just fucking talk. If you're quiet, I worry. If you talk, I won't worry.
That's why this BTRV is on the road, because we're going to fucking talk. There's my first F-bomb on the podcast, by the way. I always end with this question, Johnny, and thank you for spending time and wanting to spend this time. And again, for all you've done to make this RV happen.
I can't thank you enough. Stop. Seriously, I can't.
We're back and forth on this all the time. I appreciate you. I know you appreciate me. What's thank not to you. Appreciate? Look at me. I'm
we
freaking awesome.
We appreciate each other. We are.
It's all love in the house. But I have to ask you this. What keeps you hopeful?
Myself.
Tell me more about that.
Knowing that I can achieve anything I want when I set my mind to it, and knowing that, you know, life is so short. We never know when it's going to end, and that I'm just going to make the best of every day, and I am the only person who can do it. No one can do it for me.
What an incredible conversation. Thank you for this gift.
I thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
He's Johnny. I'm the Milkman. And this is Bumps in the Road from the BTRV for Mental Health. For more information on the BTRV for Mental Health, find us online at blasttheradio.com. Click on the events tab to find out where we'll be and when. We'd love to have a conversation with you about your bumps in the road. This is the Milkman, John Milky. Move for now.